Well, I won't go all Sound of Music on you, but today on the Allegheny Front, these are a few of our favorite things about summer. Spying bright ladybugs crawling through the garden, cooking up and foraging meals to satisfy hungry campers, and trying new things, like pushing off into a big river in a kayak for your first solo paddle. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. Today, the Allegheny Front celebrates summer. Grab your sunscreen and please stay tuned. First on the Allegheny Front, we wanted to know what some of you do on summer weekdays. So we headed to Point State Park in Pittsburgh, the scenic site where the Allegheny, Ohio, and Monongahela rivers meet. The fountain there has just been renovated, and a number of people were cooling off in the water, as well as warming up with sports activities around the lawn.
We're with a group from Highmark. We're doing tough mudder training. We tend to use the park for our stuff, physical stuff or whatever, so it's like an outside gym. Yeah. Basically, we're doing a lap. We do a 400, which is a quarter mile. Then we take the sandbell, walk it down the other side, and do some sort of exercise with the sandbell. It's like a big sandbag, only it's fancier. It's a fancy sandbag. Yeah, this is how we spend our lunch. No two martini lunch here anymore, right?
We meet up here in Bike Ride for lunch.
I'm 60 today, so we're commemorating that with the ride.
60-minute ride.
We're going to go across the river down through Southside to Hot Metal, and then back across and down the Eliza Furnace Trail.
And then what are you going to do?
Go back to work.
We are from Pittsburgh, but we live in Santa Barbara, California. The fountain was reopened. It wasn't open the last time we were here, so we thought we'd come down with the kids and check it out and just enjoy the day.
We're actually going in the fountain. I like splashing and like kicking the water. And I just like having a fun time in the water.
Those were the voices of Tim Reza, Kelly Rowland, John Williams, J.R. Stewart, Bob Breen, and Amy and Luke Blevins. Throughout the show, we'll be letting you know our staff's favorite summer activities. Please stick around. As we jump into outdoor summer activities on today's Allegheny Front, we have a little bit of a camping theme. We start our program with a favorite piece produced and first aired last year by the Allegheny Front's Kara Holsapple. First, she joins me in the studio for a moment. Kara, how's your summer going?
It's going pretty great.
Your first story in today's show is about a camp for kids who identify as LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and or questioning. Now, these are kids who might not normally feel free to kind of let loose and open up in the outdoors as other kids might at a traditional summer camp.
Right. This is really a place where they can be in nature, be themselves, and find each other.
Kara, do you have any summer camp memories yourself?
Most of the camps I went to were kind of like geek camps where you did academic stuff. But I did go camping outdoors with my family, and those were some of the best memories of my childhood.
Great. Let's listen to your story about summer camp for LGBTQ kids.
The black is 4 points per arrow. The blue is 6 points per arrow. The red is 8 points per
it's
arrow.
It's overcast, windy, and threatening rain, but the archery event for Camp Olympics must go on.
Do not shoot your competitor. I'll lose points. It is.
Three teams of campers have been swimming, canoeing, and kayaking for the gold. Now Reagan Pierce, 16, is strategizing how to stick an arrow in the bullseye of the huge roll of hay across from her. She's playing for the Querios.
Well, I guess I shoot, to the right, so I aim to the left and down, because it always goes too high. So I'm trying to, like, make up for it.
8 points for Reagan.
If the Querios don't sound like your typical summer camp team name, that's because we're at camp, with a Q. It's a summer camp on Cheat Lake in West Virginia for gay and transgender kids and kids of same-sex parents. Dreams of Hope, a Pittsburgh-based performance group for LGBTQ youth and allies, runs the overnight camp. And Pierce says it's a breath of fresh air from the other camp she's attended.
The other camp I go to is, like, they're very homophobic and, like, very... It's, like, sort of scary, just, like, because you're afraid you'll slip up. I don't know. Here's, like, a really nice community. I like it a lot. It's really safe.
Archery is a favorite among the 12 campers, says 19-year-old counselor in training Antonio Fernandez.
We make believe we're in the zombie apocalypse and Hunger Games all at the same time, but it's really a friendly competition and sportsmanship. It's so good. We cheer each other on, it, even if we miss. It's like, yeah, you made a dent in the fence. It's awesome.
Fernandez says he felt pigeonholed as a kid when it came to playing outdoors.
I did not grow up with guy friends, so I was always with the girls, and it was always, you know, jump rope and, you know, things that, you know, you would assume a woman would do, and that's how I grew up. When in fact, my entire life, I've loved sports. Right now, it's like I'm kind of catching up.
Camp director Brad Mumpower says this camp gives LGBTQ kids a chance to have the same summer camp experience as anyone else, and they need it. Not only are they less likely to join team sports, they have a more compelling reason to stay plugged in, inside, than some other kids.
If you don't live in a city where you have a gay youth group, then you may not see another queer kid. And so the only way to see, to talk to your peers is to do it online.
I hate that arrow. So while 14-year-old Erica Ridenour isn't exactly thrilled with the trajectory of the arrow she just shot,
like, sometimes I think that, like, people are going to make fun of me if I do something wrong. I think about that a lot, actually. I don't know why.
She's glad she's doing it at this camp, where she can enjoy being outdoors. And each of her fingernails can be painted a different color of the rainbow.
There's people like me here, so I feel a little bit better.
For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kara Holsoppel.
A little later in the show, the Allegheny Front's Kara Holsoppel returns with a related story. She reports that the outdoors can present some special challenges for adults who identify as LGBTQ as well. And that, like the kids in camp, there's strength and fun in numbers. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Please stay tuned to the Allegheny Front.
My name is Matt Singer. I'm an intern with the Allegheny Front. My favorite thing to do in the summer is to go down the lazy river at amusement parks with my friends and family and relax and drift into peace and leisure. Have a good summer.
When one Pittsburgh chef and carpenter goes camping, hot dogs and dehydrated chicken soup aren't on the menu. The Allegheny Front's Hal B. Klein stopped into John Heidelmeyer's kitchen to see what was cooking. And before we go to that story, Hal and I are going to talk about some of our summer memories. How you doing, Hal?
I'm great. How you doing?
Good. So, Hal, what were some of your fondest memories as a kid?
I didn't go camping, per se, a lot when I was a kid. I went to camp.
To camp.
Yeah, to camp, to summer camp. And we slept in really kind of like rustic bunks, which is sort of like in between camping and not camping. But I actually remember when I was a kid, there were all these like wild blackberries that grew right near Camp Kennedy Brook up in Monticello, New York. And I remember I'd love going out in the woods and kind of grabbing them and coming home and like stealing some sugar packets from the canteen and like mashing them together into like this like really like rudimentary jam.
So what about summers now?
Yeah, so now I'm indoors writing stories. I try to get out as much as I can. I'm really big on gardening, though. I started gardening about 4 or 5 years ago just with a tomato plant. Everyone can grow a tomato plant and some basil and some herbs. Even if you just have a windowsill, you can grow a lot of food. I think sometimes, you know, people are like summer and you have to do things and do things and do things. But sometimes, especially when it's this hot, you know, it's nice to just kind of sit in a hammock and read a book.
Well, one guy we know who you interviewed, John Heidelmeyer, isn't going to be sitting around. He'll be one of these people running around and taking some good food with him as he goes. Let's hear the story that you produced.
John Heidelmeyer, a chef and carpenter, is in his Pittsburgh apartment stirring a simmering pot of pinto beans. Roughly chopped bacon sizzles in the cast iron frying pan on the next burner. He's preparing for an upcoming camping trip. He'll ride his bike for several days through the Pennsylvania wilderness.
Camping, hiking, you know, you burn 4,000 calories in a day. You want a pretty hearty meal that's going to, like, really satisfy you.
He says it's time to leave the processed food at home. With just a little bit of work, campers can have full-flavored, healthy meals that are both tasty and thrifty.
I'm doing the simplest thing right now that I've kind of done, you know, when I'm like hard up for cash, and that's not to buy any processed food at all. I've just got a whole bunch of vegetables here from the farmer's market, probably $10 worth of stuff. I've got a couple of ears of corn. I've got a couple onions. I've got like one heirloom tomato. I've got some cheap bacon, and I've got a bag of beans, and all of that cooked nicely, cooked slowly with some water, some, you know, some chili powder or something. I mean, that's a nice meal. That's something that can sustain you for a long time.
Delicious and nutritious camping food isn't just limited to what you bring with you. Heidelmeyer says that just about any time of the year except for deep winter, sustenance can be found right beside you on the trails and in the woods of western Pennsylvania. In early spring, there are nettles, a wild green that cooks down just like spinach. Now, as we hit the height of summer, the natural environment produces a veritable salad mix for hungry campers.
Right now, there's purslane, there's chickweed, there's lamb's quarters.
There's also a parade of fruit. First there were mulberries, and now blueberries, raspberries, and currants. It won't be too long before plum, peach, and nectarine trees are producing fruit. But Heidelmeyer's prized finds are closer to the ground.
You typically find pretty good mushrooms in the spring, too. It's a good season for morels. Later on, like in the summer, you'll see big pom-pom mushrooms in meadows. You know, they're like, it's kind of like a giant white balloon that you'll see sitting around. That's a pretty safe mushroom to forage because you can't really mistake anything for it.
But for the inexperienced forager, there's certainly a risk of getting sick, or worse, if you don't know what you're looking for. So you probably want to err on the side of caution, and when in doubt, avoid anything that you're unsure about eating. There are a number of foraging books available with photos and illustrations, so you can easily identify plants. As Heidelmeyer pours his home-cooked stew into pint-sized glass jars, he says that once you begin to learn about the edible, natural world surrounding your campsite, you'll truly be getting back to nature.
I've always felt like, you know, if I go to the grocery store and buy, like, stuff for burgers and, you know, bags of chips or whatever and stuff them in my saddlebags and take it with me, it's not quite as rewarding as the experience.
For Heidelmeyer, who also adds protein to his backpacking diet by fishing, the next step is to really get in touch with his wild side.
I'm a bow hunter recreationally, too, so my eventual goal, which is maybe a little bit ridiculous but maybe doable, too, is to ride out somewhere with my bike, take a hunting trip, you know, bag a deer, and then just subsist on that for a week or two.
For the Allegheny Front, I'm Hal B. Klein.
Hi, I'm Reed Frazier. I'm a reporter and producer at the Allegheny Front. My favorite thing about summer, it's gotta be swimming. Whether it's at the beach, if I'm lucky enough to go that far, or in one of the local streams in western Pennsylvania, a nice swimming hole, or even at the local chlorine-smelling municipal pool. There's just nothing like that feeling of weightlessness and kind of freedom from gravity that swimming allows you, and in this part of the world, you gotta go during the summer.
Lots of people can feel intimidated by the great outdoors, but for some gay and transgendered people, being in the outdoors can be downright dangerous. 16 years ago, two women were murdered in a hate crime on the Appalachian Trail in Virginia, apparently because they were presumed to be a couple. Last year, two lesbian women in Kentucky were asked to leave a park because of their sexual orientation. The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsapple has this story on the risks and rewards of being out in the outdoors. We first aired this story last year. Several of the individuals in this story asked that their full or real names not be used because they fear discrimination.
Chris Stahl steps down a gravel path to a clearing where he was harassed several years ago in this urban Pittsburgh park.
It used to be a field down here, but it totally changed over to wetlands. Like they put all.
Stahl's a fit transgender man in his early 40s with a goatee. When he and a friend were walking here, they came upon a group of men playing football.
I think I was only on testosterone for under a year, so not all the effects had quite taken place yet. They couldn't determine what gender I was and proceeded to say some very harassing, not so nice things when we got right about here.
Stahl decided to confront them, but it didn't go well.
We had to make a pretty quick dash out of here. I thought we were going to get beat up. It was definitely scary. I didn't come down here for a while afterwards.
While most news headlines on gay rights focus on jobs and marriage, there's little discussion about protecting people in public spaces, like state and community parks. Yet in Pennsylvania and other states, no overarching state Human Relations Act expressly says that gay and transgender people are guaranteed access to public accommodations. Ted Martin is with Equality Pennsylvania, a gay and transgender rights group. He says in 70% of the state, people could be denied services in stores or recreation in parks just for being perceived as gay or transgender.
You know, I think that the people don't understand that. I think people don't feel that that is a reality, or they feel that it's covered elsewhere. And the fact of the matter is, in Pennsylvania, it is not.
Martin says there's no legal recourse for gay and transgender people in these areas where the law isn't on their side. Some communities do have such legislation, but not Washington County, where a gay woman who goes by the name Cinders lives and works. She's the organizer of Wilderness Women and Friends, a group that gets gay women together outdoors. On this sunny, late summer morning, Cinders is carefully selecting logs from a loose pile in her yard.
I'm a scavenger, but this time around, there was a maple tree right over there that didn't quite make it.
This is Wilderness Women's first work party.
So I kind of put out the call, and sure enough, I've got a couple complete strangers I've never met before are going to show up and help me to split firewood.
She says the group helps build community for gay women and the men and friends who tag along, and a sense of safety in numbers.
I think sometimes we feel intimidated. I think that sometimes we feel alone. So to have a group of folks that we can play outdoors with is more fun.
Like other gay outdoors groups, they advertise their bike rides, camping, and field trips on a website and a listserv for the gay community. As Cinders pulls the chain and revs up the log splitter, two others, Lynn and Anne, arrive. Lynn says, as a lesbian, she's felt more than a little intimidated outdoors, even though she's an experienced camper.
Oh yeah, all the time. You get, because especially at campgrounds or stuff like that, you got to be so careful. Especially, I don't know, I get scared, you know, sometimes at night.
Cinder says she's never felt discriminated against in the outdoors. She thinks people who love the outdoors are friendlier and kinder. It's been a different story in her work and other areas of her life. There, as anywhere, discrimination can be subtle or more overt. But she says it all starts with preconceived notions about who gay and transgender women and men are. And she sees that changing.
I think it gets better as we find that there are more people who are all about who you are and not about what they perceive you are.
For many gay, bisexual, and transgender people, that means being less afraid to display their gay pride bumper stickers while pulling into their campsites. And Cinder says gives a wilderness woman the opportunity to enjoy the outdoors like anyone else. She mentions a bumper sticker you might have seen that says, "Wild women don't get the blues," and how for her, it's kind of true.
To me, wild means that I'm at peace with nature as far as I'm at home in my natural setting. That's what a wild woman is.
For the Allegheny Front, I'm Carol Holsapple.
Hello, I'm Tom Prigg. I'm an intern with the Allegheny Front. One of my favorite things to do in the summer is to get down to West Virginia, usually Seneca Rocks or New River Gorge, hang out on a rock ledge that's 1,000 feet above the valley floor. It's pretty cool to hang out and relax in the breeze. And we're so high that we can look down on the backs of soaring hawks, to be above them, to see their backs as they pass underneath of you. It's pretty cool.
One activity that's catching on this summer is ladybug hunting. The Allegheny Front's Janelle Pfeiffer headed out to learn more. Janelle, you got your magnifying glass out. And what did you find out when you added ladybug hunting to your summer bucket list?
One of the things I learned is that little kids are really smart these days. I think when I was 7, I just thought a ladybug was a ladybug. But it turns out there are some 5,000 different kinds of ladybugs in the world and 400 in North America. And this was no surprise to the kids that were participating in this workshop.
You also learned that in recent decades, the distribution of species across North America has been changing dramatically. Scientists are trying to figure out why. How are they doing that?
Well, so they're building this huge database. It's one of the largest and most geographically widespread ladybug databases in existence. And they're using kid scientists to help them build it.
That's great. Do you have any little tape you could play before we hear the main story?
Oh, yeah. Here's a good one.
So here's staghorn sumac, and it's flowering. So look at all the bugs on this.
Whoa.
And they are just looking for nectar.
That was great. Now let's listen to Janelle Pfeiffer's story about ladybug hunting.
There is a lot of bugs on this planet.
7-year-old Tess Foster isn't really a bug person.
I don't know. Since I was a little kid, I was kind of scared of them.
But she is one of a handful of kids participating in a citizen science workshop put on by the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania. Today's mission?
We're doing a ladybug project where you have to find ladybugs.
The group spans out across the lawn of the Beaver Area Memorial Library, northwest of Pittsburgh. The kids, all under age 8, and their parents peer through the library's manicured gardens and the scraggly brush of a nearby park. They have bug boxes, magnifying glasses, and photos to help them ID different species of ladybugs by their spots. Inside, Audubon Society environmental educator Ryan Stauffer explains the point of the project.
We want to give these scientists mountains of data. From a scientist's perspective, I would think it's like heaven.
This workshop, along with a couple others put on by the Audubon Society throughout the Pittsburgh area this summer, are all part of a much larger data-gathering effort called the Lost Ladybug Project. The project was started at Cornell University 13 years ago by a couple of researchers who wanted to understand how and why the numbers and locations of ladybugs across the U.S. were changing. In recent decades, for example, the native nine-spotted ladybug, or C9, has gone from being one of the most common to an incredibly rare species. Perhaps not surprisingly, the decline in the C9 coincided with the population growth of another ladybug species, known as the...
seven-spotted ladybug. This is a close cousin of the nine-spotted, but this one was introduced from Europe, so this one is not a native one.
It was introduced in the U.S. to control crop-eating aphids that were big pests to agriculture, and it's now one of the most common species of ladybugs we have. Scientists fear that losing diversity of native species might compromise how well ladybugs overall can do their job. That's eating up to 5,000 aphids each during a one-year lifetime. That the C7s are overtaking the C9s is only a theory, though. Stauffer says scientists have yet to prove it.
You know, you can't just say, oh, I've noticed that this bug has been decreasing. We can't just go on someone's opinion. No, this is whenever you go out and actually take pictures of them, that's the facts.
And getting the facts involves nothing more than finding ladybugs, taking photos, and uploading those findings to the Lost Ladybug Project website. It's an ideal project for kids, Stauffer says, because it's so simple and it gets them out exploring. After all, he says, for the under 10 crowd, science should be more Indiana Jones than Albert Einstein. Back outside the library, Stauffer and the kids find just one specimen. They gather round to discuss.
See any spots on that one?
Not really, no.
No, I don't see any spots either.
Tap them and get them in the bottom, and then you could look through the magnifier.
Yeah.
Get down.
That's an Asian ladybug.
An Asian ladybug, an example of a non-native species, and a tiny new piece of data to add to the mix. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Janelle Pfeiffer. Ladybug, ladybug, ladybug.
In addition to the Lost Ladybug Project, the Audubon Society is hosting a variety of other citizen science workshops for various ages. Those include Firefly Watch, Frog Watch, and Project Feeder Watch for birds. Visit AlleghenyFront.org to learn more.
There are 5,000 species worldwide.
Ladybug, ladybug, ladybug.
The number of spots identifies the kind. Ladybug, ladybug, ladybug.
For many people, summer means hauling colorful kayaks into one of our region's many waterways and paddling. The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsapple is new to the sport, but she knows her way around a microphone and a recorder. So she headed out with Pittsburgh Recreation Group, Venture Outdoors, to document an evening paddle on Pittsburgh's North Shore. She talked with some instructors and beginners about kayaking and brought back this report.
I've been in a dragon boat with 20 people, a raft with a few others, and a tandem kayak, just once. But I've never kayaked solo, just me. By myself. Can you hear my hesitation? Steve Stagnetta, a volunteer with Venture Outdoors for the beginner's course I'm about to take, is reassuring.
We get people out on the river that have not had the opportunity to do this before, so that they learn how to handle the boats, they learn how to feel comfortable in the boats. And when you're out on the river, it's a very different view of downtown than when you're walking across the bridge. And it's really incredible.
We're under the 6th Street Bridge, suiting up in red life jackets and picking out our paddles from the Kayak Pittsburgh storage lockers. I have a few moments to talk with some of the other beginners before the training starts. Bonnie DePew is from Butler, PA.
We've done kayaking in lakes before, but never on the river, so we thought maybe a beginner course might be a good idea first time out.
Her daughter Ashley isn't too worried about navigating the river.
No, it's just a little dirty at points. You can see all the stuff on the sides, but it's okay.
Victoria Yu's only been kayaking once, but never had instruction, and she'd like to go more often.
I'm trying to get outdoors more often this summer and enjoy the weather.
What keeps her from getting outside more?
General laziness, forgetting the sun is outside. When you get used to being inside all winter, you kind of forget sometimes.
Our trip leader, Joel Johnston, is about to get us all used to our kayaks before we get out on the water.
A kayak really is a technical piece of equipment, not real technical, but you know, anything that's that way, you do well to like kind of figure out how to master it instead of, you wouldn't just jump on a bike your first time without ever getting in one and go, wow, let's just do this, you know?
He leads us to a grassy place along the Allegheny River, where we learn about everything from getting our flotation devices to fit.
This clip on the bottom is all important.
To how to address or hold our paddle.
This is a shaft. This is a blade. This thing here that's kind of concave should be facing back towards you all the time when you're holding your paddle properly.
Guess who's holding it upside down? Me, of course. Before we graduate to practicing on the river, Mike Adams, a supervisor at Kayak Pittsburgh, gives me one last piece of advice. Don't lean to the side or to the front. And if I do?
Luckily, everything floats, so it's all good.
Adams puts me in my boat.
All right, can you reach these foot pegs right here?
Yes.
Yes, does that feel comfortable?
Yes.
All right, here's your paddle.
Okay.
And away I go, backwards, as you do, into the Allegheny. I manage to remember how to turn myself around. Forward stroke on one side, backward stroke on the other. And I surprise myself by keeping up with the group, to the 7th Street Bridge, the 8th, almost to Washington's Landing, 2 miles away. I can't even see the boat launch anymore, when we hear the thunder. Single file, we paddle back, fast. I'm getting sloppy and tired, so more water is coming into my kayak. I need a moment. That's when I look up and see the view of the city that Steve Stagnetta was talking about before. This is my city, I think to myself. My river. He's right, I never saw it that way before. A lightning bolt or two motivates me to pick up my paddle and pick up the pace. We all make it back to the launch in good time, before the rain. Back at Kayak Pittsburgh, Victoria Yu says the lightning made for a dramatic finish.
It did make me paddle faster. Yeah, I wondered why I was going so slowly. I was paddling as fast as I could, but yeah, it was a lot of fun though, and it was worth it.
I have to agree. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Carol Holsapple.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front's Summer Show. We hope we've inspired you to enjoy this season just a little more. Kathy Naur is the executive producer, who says,
one of my favorite things about summer is the wildflowers in my garden, and my favorite insects that come flying by are the hawk moths. They love the wild bergamot and other flowers I have there.
Janelle Pfeiffer is our production director. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. And if you're looking for the perfect t-shirt for this summer, our organic cotton summer shirts with Allegheny Front logos are available at our website for donations of just $25. AlleghenyFront.org. Join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is supported by the Heinz Endowments and the A.D. and J.W. Wilson Fund of the Pittsburgh Foundation.